I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you have tuned in. Today we're going to talk about hungry kids and some solutions to keeping them fed. Here are two third graders from Bryant Woods Elementary School in Howard County.
I had a juice. I had cereal and Cheez-Its. And I think if we don't eat breakfast in the morning, then it will affect us at lunch, because at lunch we won't be able, or we will be very hungry, and then we'll eat all our food, and then we'll still be hungry. So I think you should eat breakfast before. And then sitting in a classroom before we eat breakfast, I think it's kind of fun because we get to sit next to our friends and talk.
I had for breakfast cinnamon toast crunch and apple juice. And sitting with my class, it kind of makes me feel good before the day starts. And it keeps me energized before lunch.
An on-the-ground report from two third graders at Bryant Woods Elementary School in Howard County. Thanks to WIPR's Jonna McCone for this tape. Her report on free breakfast offerings aired last month. We'll link to her story on Midday's show page at WIPR.org. Maryland is arguably the richest state in the country, with a median annual income of about $74,000. But in the 2014 American Community Survey, part of the census, found that of every 10 adults, one of every 10 adults and 13% of children live below the poverty line. That's less than $24,000 a year for a family of four. And Baltimore City ranks first in the state for child poverty. More than one-third of its children live below the poverty line. Maryland's State Department of Education found that nearly half of children were eligible for the free and reduced meals program during the 2014-2015 school year. That means their families' incomes were at or below 185% of the federal poverty line. Today, meals at rec centers to a push to offer breakfast after the morning school bell rings, to a federal program that provides free meals for all students, regardless of their family's income, we look at how community groups and schools are combating child hunger. With me in the studio is Melissa Moore. She's Program Director of Food Access for Family League of Baltimore. Family League of Baltimore works with more than 100 community-based organizations in the city on issues that include nutrition and health, summer learning, and mentoring youth. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Michael J. Wilson, director of Maryland Hunger Solutions, a nonprofit that fights hunger across the state. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here again.
So, Michael, today is Maryland Crunch Day.
That's correct.
What does that mean?
So today's the day we focus on school breakfast. We pick one day a year when we try to focus on school breakfast, on the importance of school breakfast, on the importance of school nutrition, and we use the apple as a metaphor for that. It's fun, it's healthy, it's things that kids can actually physically touch, and every school district in the state put apples on their breakfast menu today. In addition to that, every state senator in Annapolis had an apple on his desk or her desk. We had the Talbot County Health Department participating. Congressman Steny Hoyer tweeted out a picture biting an apple. So we really try to focus on the social media about this, but it's really about the hard part about this, which is why every kid should start the day with a healthy breakfast. And that's harder for kids who obviously are experiencing poverty.
Okay, so the apples, aside from the apples that were lobbying in Annapolis,
yeah,
the apples were on the breakfast table.
They were on the breakfast menu.
But lots of kids don't eat breakfast at school, right? I mean,
right.
How many kids actually were crunching on these apples?
So I don't know how many in every school district. We know that the goal we've tried to reach is that we want to make sure that of the kids who are eligible for free and reduced lunch, we get as many of them to also have breakfast, because if they're already eligible for free and reduced lunches, they're eligible for free and reduced breakfast programs. So we want them in the breakfast as well. So in Maryland, we've done pretty well. We're about fourth in the nation at about 69%. Our goal is to try to get to 70%.
Let me make sure I understand where that 69% of the kids who are getting free and reduced lunch
are also eating breakfast.
Free and reduced price breakfast.
That's correct.
So you're at not quite three-fourths.
Not quite three-fourths, but that still puts us fourth in the nation among states. So we've done better than other states, but not as good as we should. And so we're continuing to try to expand breakfast programs. And there are a number of programs by which to do that. The community eligibility provision.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. But I want to ask Melissa Moore of Family League of Baltimore first. Can you give us a picture of hunger in Baltimore? Child hunger.
Well, like you said, over a third of children in Baltimore City are living in poverty. And we know that hunger is poverty is the cause of hunger. And so making sure that those children are able to access the breakfast, able to access the lunch, after school meals, summer meals, is our goal at Family League.
How many kids are receiving meals from Family League? I mean, kids are getting meals in school.
Correct.
And is Family League involved in that delivery?
Well, food insecurity doesn't end at the end of the school day. And so there are a number of different after-school programs in Baltimore City. We're serving at over 250 of them a supper meal and a snack meal. So over 10,000 kids every day are getting those meals. And so potentially in Baltimore City, there's access to 3 meals a day during the school year.
And where do these meals come from? The meals that Family League...
We contract with vendors, but it's called the Child and Adult Care Food Program, and it's run through the USDA, and our state agency is MSDE, the Maryland State Department of Education. But our catering companies are located in Baltimore City, and that's where the meals actually are made, and they get delivered to the sites.
So it's a jobs program to some degree. I mean, it employs people.
It does employ people, and over 50% of the vendors' staff is living in Baltimore City.
Michael J. Wilson, how is it that such a wealthy state has so many kids needing meals at school?
It's because hunger is one of the things about poverty that's not well known or seen. So you began with a story on Bryant Woods Elementary School in Howard County, which is arguably the wealthiest county in the wealthiest state in the country. But even in Howard County, there's poverty. And Bryant Woods is in a community that is challenged with poverty. So they are eligible to provide free breakfast and lunch to kids at that school. You talk about the wealth of the state, but there's poverty in every part of the state, whether it's on the Eastern Shore or Western Maryland or Baltimore or around the D.C. suburbs. And so we're challenged to try to address that hunger, even though you think of us as a wealthy state and even those communities are thought as wealthy.
This is Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with Melissa Moore, Program Director of Food Access for Family League of Baltimore, and with Michael J. Wilson, Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions. We're talking about kids hungry at school and what's being done about that. Did you receive free or reduced price lunches when you went to school? Did having to say that your meal was free make you less likely to take advantage of that lunch? Join our conversation. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or toll free. We have a toll free number that goes around the state, and that is 1-866-661-9309. Or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We'd love to have you in the conversation. We have often heard, many of us here, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Here's a third grade teacher at Bryant Woods, Lucy Aaron Gurin, on that topic.
It's really nice to be able to give breakfast to every single student at school, because it's just, we can completely eliminate that being a factor as to why they're not learning. They're energized with the breakfast they're given, and we know that they're getting something healthy because everything is approved by the county nutritionist.
That teacher talks about every kid in the school taking part in this lunch. Is that the norm in Maryland? I mentioned a few minutes ago that kids who are eligible have to be under 185% of poverty.
Right.
So square that circle for me.
So Bryant Woods is a little bit different because it's participating in community eligibility. So they feed breakfast and lunch to every kid every day, and they don't have to do individual meal applications and figure out, you know, you're eligible, you're not, you have to pay, you're free, you're partially reduced. So that's a little bit different. In a lot of schools, in most schools, they have individualized meal application. So they'll say, Sheila, your parents have enough money, so you're going to pay for your breakfast and lunch. And Melissa, your parents are, you know, at 185% of poverty, so you'll get a reduced meal. And Michael, your parents, you know, don't have very much, so you'll get a free meal. So that's what happens in most schools. Bryant Woods is a little bit different because they use community eligibility.
And that community eligibility program, how widespread is it?
So it's pretty widespread. It's eligible in every place in the state that is eligible for it. So it depends on the poverty rate in the school and in the community. Baltimore City, for example, where 85% of the kids are eligible for free and reduced meals, the entire city is eligible. So every kid in Baltimore City starting last June gets free breakfast and free lunch, which is a real boon to the school system and a real benefit for the kids in Baltimore City schools. That's also true in Somerset County on the Eastern Shore. There are about 9 schools in Prince George's County. There are about 12 schools in Washington County. There are 2 in Howard County. So it's throughout the state where people are eligible and where they've utilized the program.
And every place where the school is eligible in Maryland, are those schools taking advantage of it?
No. So there are some schools and some school districts that have not taken advantage of it. And so we're trying to have conversations with them to encourage them to look at this as a possibility. It's a financial benefit because it's reimbursed by the federal government. It's from USDA. It's a good benefit because it takes the stigma out of some kids who are free and some kids who are reduced and the kids who have to pay. And so there are lots of benefits to this program, and we're trying to help expand it every place we can. There are some jurisdictions which have not used it for a variety of reasons.
Melissa Moore, every kid in public school in the city of Baltimore is eligible for lunch and for breakfast.
Correct.
Right. And so how long has that been true? And did you see a change when that went into effect?
Yeah, we saw a big change. And I think, you know, it reduced the stigma. But also, if you think about 85% of 86,000, you're collecting that many meal benefit applications at the Food Nutrition Services. And that's a lot of work to collect all of that information. And so now our FNS over in Baltimore City, Food Nutrition Services, can concentrate on what they should be focusing on, and that's the food and the food quality in breakfast and lunch and being able to provide better options, kid-approved options, and things like that that I know that they're working on.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here and talk a lot more about all of this when we come back. Melissa Moore, Program Director for Food Access for Family League of Baltimore, and Michael J. Wilson, Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions, will be with us. And what about you? Do your children skip breakfast in the morning? Do you think they'd be more likely to eat if breakfast was provided in their homeroom class? Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or give us a call, 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about child hunger. What's being done to make sure no student goes hungry? What role do community groups play in providing meals after school and during breaks? I'm speaking with Melissa Moore, Program Director of Food Access for Family League of Baltimore, and Michael J. Wilson, Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions. What do you see in the schools where your kids go? Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us. 410-662 is our local number. 1-866-661-9309 is our toll-free number. So we were talking about what has happened in Baltimore since the community access that allows federal funding for meals for all kids. What have you seen in terms of the actual number of
right.
meals served?
Mm-hmm. So the community eligibility provision went in effect last June, and since then we've seen a huge increase in breakfast and lunch participation. Over 10,000 more kids are participating in lunch than they were last year at this
10,000
time.
10,000 more kids?
Mm-hmm.
Out of, I've forgotten how many students in there are in the school district?
Around 86,000.
Okay.
So I think the real numbers are 10,000 more lunches being served a day. I don't know that it's more kids per se. So it's 10,000 more lunches per day.
Okay. So, and more breakfast also?
And more
correct.
Breakfast as well. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So, Michael, you were saying?
We believe, though we're trying to do a little more in-depth research about this, that there are a lot of kids, particularly teenagers, who had stigma and didn't want to go into the cafeteria and get the free lunch or the reduced price lunch. And that stigma has been eliminated throughout the city because everybody gets lunch.
Okay. So you believe that because why?
We believe that because we know that we've seen that in other places where we've seen community eligibility be used, both in the state of Maryland and around the country. For example, in Somerset County, which last year went to community eligibility, they served, and it's a small school district, they served more than 100,000 more meals over the course of a year. And that wasn't because they had more students. It was because students were more willing to actually eat the meals because they didn't have to worry about the stigma. This is particularly important at the high school level.
More so than in elementary
right.
school, Melissa?
That's exactly right.
How do events like a blizzard that interrupts the school day, how does that affect what happens?
Yeah, I think when most people think of a snow day, they think of sledding and, you know, going outside and hot chocolate and hanging out with their family. But in Baltimore City, when, you know, somewhere around 50 or 60,000 kids are participating in the meal program on a daily basis, that means that they're not receiving access to fresh, healthy food on snow days. It's a terrifying thing to think about. And so this past blizzard, I believe it was even named, right? It was Jonas. We were able to partner with a number of recreation centers and schools to be able to open up lunch sites and snack sites so that children could come in and access meals at those locations because school was out for an entire week.
And so did you get the lunches that the schools would have prepared, or did your vendors come up with more lunches, or
yeah,
how did it work?
We weren't able to facilitate it at the school level, but I think that's something that we're preparing for in the future in partnership with city schools. But we were able to contract with the vendors that we currently have to be able to battle the snow and have their employees come in and prepare the meals and then deliver the meals to the sites that we had identified through recreation and parks and through city schools.
So that was the Storm Jonas a couple months ago. Looking back to the unrest almost a year ago, and the riot, what happened with school lunches and school meals then in the city?
Yeah, schools were also closed that week for a few days, and so we were able, you know, again with the help of recreation and parks, to keep their sites open for the entire day. That was a safe space for children to go for the entire day to be able to receive enrichment, to have some fun, and, you know, to be able to talk about some of the things that were going on. And we were able to send food there and make sure that those children had access to those meals.
We got a call from Kathy in Pasadena. The line broke up, so we're not able to put her on the air, but she raises this question about what's in these lunches. Kathy asked, Cinnamon Toast Crunch and apple juice seems like a lot of sugar. Those are the foods that the third graders we heard from mentioned. How are foods vetted? What happens during spring or summer break? Well, we've talked a little bit about that. We'll talk more about that. And what about the weekends, she asked. But this question of how are foods vetted, can either of you address that?
So I think there is a common concern, a realistic concern, that parents and others have about the nutritional quality of school meals. I would say that they are not perfect, but they're better than they've ever been before. And that's part of the work that happened after the Healthy Hunger-Free Schools Act of 2010. So there are the kids in schools are getting whole grains. They are getting less sugar and less sodium. They're getting fruits, and they're getting, you know, better quality food than ever before. It's not the same as when we were in school, no matter what your age is. And for those of us like Melissa and myself who are regularly in schools, whether it's in Howard County or Baltimore City or Washington County, you'll see that they are really healthier meals. I want to put one plug in for Baltimore City, which just recently announced that they've eliminated high fructose corn syrup from their milk. And that took them a while to do that. They had to negotiate with suppliers and took some time to renegotiate contracts, but they were able to make that happen. So we continue to make improvements. Are they perfect? No, they're not. But in a lot of cases, particularly for poor kids, they're getting healthier meals at school than they otherwise would get at home or other places.
How much latitude does an individual school system have to in how it sources supplies? And you talked about it took a long time to negotiate high fructose corn syrup out of the chocolate milk. I would have thought that's something that a school district could do pretty quickly and straightforwardly. So what kind of restrictions are on a local school district?
I think it's important to note that these are national standards, that it's not, you know, one specific school district is deciding that this is what they're going to put on the menu. There is a national standard that comes out through USDA, and then it's implemented through the school. So Baltimore City, for example, partners with Real Food Farms to be able to bring fresh produce. The kids go and visit the farm. There's kind of that, you know, circle effect where we're able to partner with the farms, have the kids see the farms, plant the seeds, and then eat the food. And so partnerships like that, I think, are really important. And they're going the extra mile on that. That's not something that's required from the USDA and the national standards.
I want to bring into our conversation now Jeff Prue. He is a food and nutrition services supervisor in the Washington County schools. Jeff Prue, welcome to Midday.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I guess it's afternoon now.
It is afternoon. Your ears are probably still echoing from the crunch at 9:15 this morning, right?
They are.
Was there a big biting sound in Washington County schools?
Yeah, we did. We featured fresh local apples on our menus this morning. All of our apples come from Reinhardt's Orchards right here in Smithsburg, right from within the county. And so, 8,700 students roughly had breakfast this morning. So, you know, we sure do hope that they all had a local apple when they did it.
So tell us about Washington County. Washington County schools participate in this community eligibility program we've been talking about?
We do. We've been in the program since its last pilot year, which was the first year it was eligible in the state of Maryland. So I guess this is probably our third year in. And we started with 5 schools initially, and we now have 12 operating in that program.
And those are all the schools that are eligible because of the income levels of those areas?
Yeah, we probably have more schools that are eligible. In fact, I shouldn't say even probably. I mean, I know we have more schools that are eligible. The eligibility threshold is actually fairly low. But these are the schools that we felt we could truly enter in the program and fund. There is a component of that program where, you know, it's not all fully funded by the federal government. You have to meet certain eligibility criteria, certain numbers, to receive a full reimbursement from the federal government. So while some schools may be eligible financially, it may not make sense for the LEA.
So how were these schools then chosen in Washington County? And tell us about what's happened in those schools since they've been taking part in this.
Sure. So we went through a process. You know, there's a way we have to look at identifying certain students in a way to determine the eligibility for the program. So it starts there. It starts at the granular data at each school level, how many students are really, you know, truly living in poverty as we think about it. So we start with that data. We roll it up to see what the numbers look like from a school-based level, and then we align those with other like schools to determine a blend and to really get a sense of where our financial reimbursements are going to come from to enter into that program. And that's where it sort of starts. We took an opportunity to bring in some schools that really we felt, while the numbers may not support it on their own, but there was specific need in those locations. So we have 2 special ed centers that operate out of the same building, but they're 2 distinct programs. So these are our students that, for whatever reason, are not surviving in a classroom environment, or medically can't survive in a classroom environment. So that was a natural hit for us. That was an easy selection that, you know, these families have so many other needs that they have to attend to that if we could help with school meals programs in that way, we wanted to. We have an alternative school for students that are not successful in a traditional classroom environment. One out of every 12 students in that particular school is living in foster care. So that was a natural selection. So, you know, it's not just numbers. You have to really apply some sense of discretion to see really where is need comparatively to what the numbers just automatically say.
So how many lunches are you serving compared to what you were before? And how many breakfasts?
Yep, so for us, there was not a huge increase in breakfast in this cluster of schools, in part because these schools were already in the Maryland Meals for Achievement free breakfast program. So students in these schools were already getting free breakfast. The larger jump came at lunch, where we may have seen anywhere between about a 5 or 6% increase upwards to about a 10 or 12% increase. And it really depends on what was the general poverty level of that school at the time you entered the program. So I'll take a school like Bester Elementary School, which had 90% of its students eligible for free or reduced price meals in the traditional school lunch program. So in a school like that where a lot of kids are already receiving that high level of subsidy and the vast majority of them were already receiving a free meal, that's a school that we saw a smaller increase. But a school like Ruth M. Monroe Primary School, which had a free and reduced rate in the 60s, saw a much larger increase.
Well, what is the participation like in elementary compared to middle and high school?
Typically, elementary runs a little bit higher than middle and high school from a straight meal perspective. If you're talking specifically about National School Lunch Program meal and not, let's say, what we would call other a la carte items that we're selling, elementary is higher, then middle school, and then high school is particularly our lowest. Oftentimes, in a high school setting, students may not take a complete meal, but they might buy bits and pieces and buy them more at an a la carte level.
Let me ask Melissa Moore if that's what you see in Baltimore City too.
That's a really good question. I think we would have to talk to the Food Nutrition Services Director in Baltimore City to get an accurate picture of.
I think what Jeff is describing is true throughout the state in terms of between elementary and middle school and high school. I want to go back to one other point that he made, which is kind of the way they've described this. The way the program works is you can use a single school because it's eligible, like in Howard County they did, or you can use a grouping of schools, like Washington County did, or you can do an entire school district, like Baltimore City Schools. There's a lot of flexibility here. And so Jeff's description of the granularity and looking at all the data is very appropriate in terms of trying to get the right match.
Jeff Pru, in Washington County, I understand that breakfast there in Washington County schools is served to students in their homeroom class. So that means like after the school day started, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, so the Maryland Meals for Achievement, which is, you know, a program, and Michael Jay might have a better number off the top of his head in terms of how many schools are actually involved in that program statewide, but we have 28 in the state that are involved in that program, and one of the stipulations of that program is that breakfast is served and consumed in the classroom. So we actually pack all the meals in insulated carriers, insulated bags, and we deliver a bag into each homeroom with a classroom roster, and we ask the homeroom teacher to visually identify students taking the appropriate components of a school breakfast and checking off that student's name that they received their breakfast. You know, we still have to follow the requirements of the program set forth by USDA, but, you know, food service folks aren't doing it, so we have to rely on our classroom teachers, and they do tremendous work, really, in that venue.
And
you know,
why is
managing? Go ahead.
I'm trying to understand why it's better from your perspective to serve kids in their homeroom as opposed to in the cafeteria.
You know, eating for adults as well as for students is a social activity. So if my friends are eating, I'm more likely to eat. And you know, even though the program is free, doesn't necessarily mean that every child is going to consume it. But if you can turn it into a social event where I'm eating with my friends and they're getting breakfast, I'm getting breakfast, then students are more likely to take and consume breakfast. We're actually playing with a model now with two of our CEP schools where we've sort of withdrawn from Maryland Meals for Achievement on a temporary basis through the end of the year, running a pilot to say, in a school that is universally free with CEP, that has had Maryland Meals for Achievement, what happens if we go to a grab-and-go model where when students are entering the building in the morning, they're grabbing their breakfast and they're taking it with them to homeroom? We just started. We're a week in. I would hesitate to give data at this point because I think it would be premature. But we want to be able to capture that and really get a sense of, you know, what are the right models so that we can, you know, potentially steer legislation if that's what it requires and what the numbers indicate.
Michael Wilson, what do you see statewide on that point, whether or not kids eat more breakfast in homeroom than if it's in the cafeteria?
So I want to brag about Maryland just for a second, about Maryland Meals for Achievement, which is really a gold standard program. My colleagues in other states around the country are jealous that we actually have state funding to provide for a meal, breakfast in the classroom, because it's the best way to do it. You get more participation when kids are eating breakfast in the classroom with their fellow students than if you're only having the poor kids in the cafeteria before school starts. It's the epitome of the stigma. Only the poor kids are going to go to the cafeteria before school starts, and they have problems getting there on time. They have problems with transportation, whether it's the bus or a parent dropping them off or walking. If you do it after the bell in the classroom, you eliminate the stigma, and as Jeff said, you've made it a social activity. And teachers have incorporated this as part of what they're doing, so it's really been a real success.
Jeff Pru, I'm going to need to let you go here. We need to take a break, but let me ask you very briefly before I do that. We heard before you joined us from a parent who is worried about the nutritional value of the school lunch. What do you do in Washington County to make sure it's of a high nutritional value?
Well, you know, I'll argue to any parent that a school breakfast and a school lunch is the most regulated meal on the face of the planet. We have strict federal standards we have to adhere to in terms of calorie, fat component of that meal, sodium intake. And so, you know, we look through and we wave through all of the products that are available. And when we think about the products that students are eating in schools, they are not the same product as parents are buying on the commercial market or as restaurants are selling. There's an entire industry that formulates products specifically for schools. I'll brag about a company here in Washington County that makes a cinnamon roll. And when you think cinnamon roll, you're thinking, you know, large national chains that you can think of in a food court that are making this, you know, fat-laden iced. It's a similar model in terms of how the product is designed, but it's actually created with school and nutrition in mind. So it's a whole grain product that is low-fat, reduced sugar, that is a product students are going to eat. And the important point about nutrition and where we are with nutrition standards in school meals is good nutrition is only good nutrition if kids can consume it and want to consume it.
On that
and that's one of the struggles we've had.
Good nutrition is only good nutrition if kids eat it. Okay, on that point, we will let you go. Jeff Pru, Food and Nutrition Services Supervisor in Washington County Schools, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. We're going to take another short break here. When we come back, Melissa Moore of Family League Baltimore and Michael J. Wilson of Maryland Hunger Solutions are going to be with us, and we'll take your calls. Join the conversation. Our local number is 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cass. Today is Maryland Crunch Day. A few hours ago, several hundred thousand Maryland students and teachers and other folks crunched into an apple to draw attention to the importance of school breakfast. I'm speaking with Melissa Moore, Program Director of Food Access for Family League of Baltimore, and Michael J. Wilson, Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions, about the importance of breakfast and other efforts to feed Maryland's children. You can be part of this conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780. Tell us how it worked when you were in school. If you're a parent, tell us how you see it working now and what you think would be the right way to get more food into more kids. You can call us at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Melissa Moore, we mentioned summer, what happens in summer, but we didn't really go into it. So tell us, in the city of Baltimore, what happens when schools are closed in the summer, or many of them are?
Well, I think our partners at City Schools are doing a great job reaching kids during the school year. But then when summer comes and not every school is open during the summer to serve meals, where do children access that food? The food insecurity, you know, doesn't go down during the summer. If anything, it goes up because there's that lack of access at the school level. And so there is the Summer Food Service Program that is a federally funded program through the USDA, much like the school meals program. And so children can access meals at sites, breakfast and lunch or breakfast and dinner during the summer months. And those sites can be churches, can be recreation centers, it can be schools, it can be community centers. Pretty much anywhere, I think, can be a summer food site. And in Baltimore City, we have an overarching website, bemoresupersummer.org, where families, children, parents can go and look up where is a meal site near them, where is there summer enrichment near them, or where are there some free things to do near them. All of that stuff is being populated this spring, so that during the summer, all you have to do is go and click or call 211 to get that information to continue that access throughout the summer.
And we will link to that website from our page here at WIPR, the Midday page. Yes, Michael?
The thing I'd add to that is, you know, the Baltimore Family League does a great job on this, and they're one of our partners, and we help them to do recruitment as well. We know that there is a summer learning gap when kids are no longer in school. We've also learned there's a summer nutrition gap when they're no longer getting a free breakfast and a free lunch. And so being able to connect them to academic enrichment and to nutritional enrichment is a win-win for the entire community.
Well, tell me about the underpinning of the program. I mean, first of all, who pays for meals during the summer? Is it the same funding flow that supports school lunches and school breakfast during the school year?
Essentially, it's a separate funding stream, which means it has a different acronym, but it's essentially the same funding that comes through.
Mostly federal?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me more.
So you can provide meals to children and get reimbursed for those meals that you provide. There are strict requirements that need to be followed as far as the meal components, much like the school breakfast and lunch program. And so that being said, you have to provide a fruit, a vegetable, a grain, a meat or a meat alternate, and then the fluid milk. And that would be a lunch.
I think the critical part here is that there are open sites in particularly high poverty areas like Baltimore, where any kid who's in the area, who's under 18, can come and can consume a meal. And this is an important program for a lot of reasons, but it's also particularly relevant to talk about now because the Congress is right now considering reauthorizing the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Bill. And so they're having conversations about how they're going to move this program in the future.
So did I understand you, Michael Wilson, to be telling us that in every neighborhood that needs it, in the city of Baltimore, there's a place where a kid can drop in and get a meal if he or she's hungry?
If there is a site.
Yeah, so there's over 560 sites in Baltimore City. That was a number from last year. We're serving almost 30,000 children per day, but that's not as many children that are being served by the school lunch program. And so there's still more work to be done to be able to reach all those children and provide the same amount of access, the same level of access that we're providing the other 9 months of the year.
I can't even begin to imagine the logistical challenge of making sure you've got the meals at the places where kids are going to show up that day. I mean, how do you figure out where to have the meals, and do you ever run out? Do your vendors or do the centers? I mean, what kind of logistics go into that?
Yeah, I'm smiling, but it is.
Yeah, you are smiling.
It's a lot. And so today is the, you know, first beautiful day, or maybe yesterday was, but we're in full summer go. And so right now we're taking applications for those sites. We're setting up trainings for those sites. We're starting to do some soft outreach for the program. And so summer really starts now and goes through November. for us. So it's almost a year-round effort to make sure that we can provide provide the meals and provide, you know, what the city needs during those months.
When schools are in session, is the provision of a free meal something that keeps some kids in school who otherwise would be taking advantage of the sunshine and pursuing some other activities outside of school?
Yeah, I think there's research that has shown with the with CEP and with other things, access to breakfast, that it reduces the number of tardies and absenteeism in schools.
In particular, when I spoke to the superintendent of Somerset County Schools, John Gaddis, he said last year when they had CEP was the first year they had...
Last year when they had
community eligibility throughout
the community eligibility program we talked about.
Throughout the entire school year was the first year they had no suspensions because of tardiness.
Wow, that's great.
The first time in history. So they're feeding meals, breakfast and lunch to every kid, and they had no suspensions because of tardiness for the first time in school history. That's a really telling statistic.
It's Michael J. Wilson of Maryland Hunger Solutions here on Midday on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here with us is Melissa Moore, Program Director of Food Access for Family League of Baltimore. We're talking about ways to keep kids from being hungry, and we have an email from Allison who says, my children would be starving by the time they reach school if they had to wait for breakfast. Their behavior and attitude would be less than desirable, as would mine if I didn't eat until I reached work. While I appreciate this idea for the reasoning of providing children with meals who would normally not receive it at home, I wish there was a better way to provide this at home and not at school. How do you react to that, either of you?
Well, I agree with Allison. I think it's always better if the family can provide that breakfast at home, and that's a much preferable way. Unfortunately, the reality is that doesn't happen in every family. That doesn't happen in every household. And so if you can imagine those same hungry kids at school not getting breakfast, those are the kids who are unfortunately are disrupting classrooms, who are acting out, who are not able to learn. And so this is the best approach that we have to try to deal with that issue.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that all makes sense. However, I'm thinking if there are parents like Allison who really make it a priority,
right?
Aren't you left then with the stigma situation at work that the kids who are eating at school are the ones whose parents didn't get it together to give them breakfast at home? And is there still some stigma attached to that, despite these efforts to make it available to any child who wants it?
I think the reality, having observed kids in classrooms, is that kids who really, really, really aren't hungry don't eat. But most of the kids will eat if it's available.
even if they've eaten at home already?
Yeah. So even if they've eaten at home, because it may be a long time between when they left home and their commute to get to the class, and they may be hungry again. So I'm not disputing that it's not better for parents to feed kids at home. I just know that doesn't happen in every case. Some parents can't and are unable to do so.
Michael, you mentioned legislation pending in Congress. You're also lobbying for something from the Maryland legislature, right? What is that?
That's correct. So we know, but because of the expansion of community eligibility, we're providing more meals for kids, particularly in high poverty areas. But that doesn't work in every area. So one of the things we're trying to do is get the state to invest in eliminating what we call the reduced price category. So we've talked about free and reduced price meals. The reduced price category are families who make between 130 and 185% of poverty.
Can you tell me what that is for?
So that's about $24,000 to $28,000 for a family, depending on the size of the household. So they're the ones who have a hard time paying their school meal bills. They're the ones who fall behind on school meal bills and have all the challenges. Because of the expansion of community eligibility, that's only about $40,000 or so throughout the state. And so if the state will invest in eliminating that category and making those kids' meals free, that would be a significant savings for those families and a significant investment in the health and nutrition of those kids.
What would that cost the state of Maryland?
The fiscal note on that, I think, was about $3 million.
Okay.
But that's a little bit disingenuous, because the more we use community eligibility, the more that goes down. the more we fund Maryland Meals for Achievement, the more that goes down. And so the other programs that we're already using are other investments that can help us use that to make sure that those kids aren't forced to have to really have big bills.
And so when you were putting apples on the desks of state senators today, that was just a shameless effort to lobby them for this legislation?
I don't think that it was shameless. It was a clear effort. And so some of our sponsors were talking about the importance of school meals. You know, highlighting apples and school breakfast on one day is the soft way to talk about that. The hard way to talk about that is, how does the state really invest in poor kids who are just slightly above the poverty line? How do we help them and their families?
We have just a couple minutes left, and we have an important question from Christina by email, which is, what can the average person do to make a difference? Melissa Moore?
That's a really good question. I would say that if you have the means to, you can donate. I know there's a lot of national organizations that do take donations. There are a lot of Baltimore City organizations like the Family that take donations to be able to provide things in the summer and in the out-of-school time months, much like our mobile meals program, where we literally have a van that goes around to different neighborhoods and city parks to be able to serve those meals during the summer to close the gap on the amount of meals that are being served during the summer and the ones that are being served during the school year.
I say there are three quick things you can do. I mean, you can always educate yourself more about these issues. So listening to this show or going to our website, mdhungersolutions.org. The second thing is to donate, as Melissa said. And lastly, talk to your elected officials. Tell them this is an important issue to you, that you want to avoid hunger for kids and in the state of Maryland, which, as we said, is a wealthy state and the wealthiest state in the nation.
I appreciate those suggestions. Let me just, as we wrap this up, read an email from Stephanie, who said she started a school in Fairbanks, Alaska in 1968. She started school, not a school. She began school in 68. The school I attended for K through first grade served its breakfast in the classroom. I remember my favorite day was Wednesday. They served pancakes with syrup and sausage. Maybe what Washington County is doing is going back to the future, bringing back a practice that existed before. I appreciate your walking us through what some of the challenges are and what some of the solutions are that schools and nonprofits in Maryland are focusing on. Melissa Moore, Program Director of Food Access for Family League of Baltimore, thank you for being here. And Michael J. Wilson, Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions, thanks. Earlier, we spoke with Jeff Prue, Food and Nutrition Services Supervisor for Washington County Schools. I also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. More at eddiesofrolandpark.com. And thank you for listening. Tomorrow, 50 cents of every dollar is spent on products that have been tested on animals. We look at research on animal testing alternatives. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.